The Ira Kaufman podcast is on. Here we are. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is in the house. We are live at Hooters in Port Richey, our third home away from home, Ira. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeCamper is here. He's the other part of Joe Bucks Fan. And Ira, you are looking fantastic. We have so much to talk about on this podcast. Hall of Fame season is here. Now you are in full mode and getting and dealing with all the back channel interesting BS, some of which you'll talk about, some of which you won't, because you can't, and we've got plenty on the docket. How are you, Sage?
I want to make a couple opening remarks here, gentlemen. We are 1 week after the Bruce Arians press conference. 1 week. And what has happened in that 1 week interim? Bruce Arians has hired 57 assistant coaches, 27 who have played for him at Temple. I'm going to stay on this theme because I love to needle. That's what I do, really. I needle. But I told Mad Dog Russo this week on his glorious, serious show that the whole Tampa Bay area is euphoric about Bruce Arians. He goes, Ira, overrated, Ira. He's like Marv Levy. He's like Mike Tomlin. He's like McCarthy. I said, all I know is he inherited a 5-11 team and won 10 games and says this is an easier reclamation project than what he did in the desert in 2013. That's what he said. Lee, I give him props for not retreating from a challenge. You go out there and you say this is an easier job and you won 10 games with the 2013 Cardinals, doesn't that mean you got to win 10 games at least with the Bucks? Lee, I like to put pressure on the quarterback whisperer.
Well, I'm going to put pressure on one guy, and this Joe Gilbert, offensive line coach. The Bucks have been better off hiring Melissa Gilbert. I mean, this guy.
Steve, we're 6 months from training camp, and the camp is sharpening the knives already.
This guy, go look at his resume, his work, and I put work in quotation marks, or at least his results. I'll put results in quotation marks. His results in Indianapolis damn near got Andrew Luck maimed. He was had one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. It got an entire organization blown out, not just Pagano, but the GM, because the offensive line was so horrible, they couldn't keep people off Andrew Luck's back.
Well, this year, the O-line was very good. And, of course,
he was working in Arizona.
And they added Quentin Nelson. I'll
just say this. Bucks fans always whine about the offensive line. Always whine about the offensive line. Like, every guy there is a turnstile. Like, every guy there allows 20 sacks a game. You want to complain about the Bucks offensive line? This guy's going to give you ample opportunity. I hope to God I'm wrong. Goodwin, the other, whether offensive coordinator or this kind of coordinator or water boy coordinator. Ball washer coordinator, whatever. All these weird titles all these guys got. He's a good guy, Goodwin. I wouldn't be surprised if he's next Bucks head coach. But he said at his introductory press conference, if you guys want to go after the offensive line and complain about them, you start with me.
Okay.
You're up the bat, Goodwin. You better hope this guy doesn't get Jameis made. Jameis, I pray that you have life insurance already.
Ooh, he's setting a harsh tone over here.
Well, this guy's got a harsh record.
Hey, weren't they supposed to get Pete Kukla? Well, wasn't that the story?
Yes. Kukla, Fran, and Ollie?
No, Pete Kukla. Who's highly respected.
He turned him down. I actually heard, I think it was, I've heard too much, Ira. I'm paying too much attention. Arian's son talked about Kugler, and then he ended up not being here. I forget which team he went to, but it was does not seem like Joe Gilbert, who is the guy Lee was referencing and mentioned, who has a very odd resume. I'm curious to get more info on this, Ira. He was the assistant O-line coach with the Colts under Pagano. And, of course, Bruce Arians coached with Pagano. And then he was the O-line coach. And then he was the assistant O-line coach for the same team. And then he got run and he went to the University of Arizona. And now he's back. He's an older guy, a ton of experience.
See, I see Warhop got another job, Lee. That didn't take long.
Jacksonville.
Yeah. Mr. Warhop.
I didn't think he did that awful of a job. But, I'm not saying that the Bucks were the 77 Raiders for an offensive line. But this Gilbert guy scares the hell out of me. They're going to miss this Kukla, Fran, and Ollie guy you were talking about.
I tweeted the other day that I could see the Bucks having three new starters up front. Maybe that's a little strong, but I take my cue from what Arians did with 2013 Cardinals, and we replaced 15 out of 22 starters. And he's already on record saying the offensive line needs a lot of beefing up. He's not impressed with the O-line. He's done his interviews with the people that were here. These guys didn't get glowing reviews, Lee. Well, they could have asked the three of us, And we were told him the same thing. You got a lot of work to do.
I just hope Harold Goodwin gets a job done. And I hope, again, I hope Jameis, you know, his son has life insurance. Wife or his fiance has life insurance. He has life insurance. Because if it's going to be anything like Indianapolis, jailbreak, man.
I still think Donovan Smith's far from guaranteed to be back on this team, Steve.
Well, I'm glad this subject came up. A few quick nuggets. One, Warhop in Jacksonville. Warhop actually coached Doug Marrone as a player in the World League in Europe.
Wow.
So they have a connection there. I find it interesting, though, that Marrone, who's taskmaster type, tough guy in the trenches team, and the whole Tom Coughlin mystique, and all of a sudden they hire George Warhop, who's coaching one of the softer lines in the league. So I'm very curious to see what happens there. I'll guarantee you that he doesn't rotate guards there like Dirk Cutter mysteriously did. But Arians, again, Ira, was on the Adam Schefter podcast and mentioned the offensive line again as something that needs some work.
He doesn't mention any other position group.
This time he mentioned the defensive line as also needing a little bit of an upgrade. So I thought that was fascinating. I don't know how that's going to work out, but that was just this week. But there's a guy who we're going to watch in the playoffs, Sage, and maybe you can give us some wisdom on this. He plays left tackle for the Patriots. His name is Trent Brown. He's 6'8", 370 pounds. You know how they got him? They just picked him up as a trade from the 49ers. They didn't want him anymore. They did a mid-round draft pick swap. They got him a year ago, and he started every game. They love him. He's going to be the number one left tackle free agent. He's a monster. And how do these teams, these playoff teams, they all find the guys we don't?
All right, two things. One, there's only one Belichick. Now, Lee, I'm going to follow that up very quickly by saying this. Remember the case of Nate Solder, big animal, big monster tackle. Well, he left the Patriots, and he wasn't very good.
Yeah, he's okay.
So, two things. One, Belichick's unbelievable. Two, they have what is widely regarded as the best offensive line coach in football.
An old crusty guy, right?
Dante Scarnecca, who left for a year or two, and they got him back. You know, the guy was retired. I don't know what Belichick did, pleaded, got down on one knee. They got the guy back, and the guy makes a Chateaubriand out of chuck steak. Yeah, you know. By the way, I got a chuck steak a couple weeks ago.
I thought Chateaubriand was
wine. Had to throw it out. No good. No good.
You know, I'm not a cultured guy like you, Ira. I thought Chateaubriand was wine.
Chateaubriand is when you go to Burns, they have Chateaubriand for two. Big steak meal with all the mushrooms.
I learned something
and everything
every day. I always thought that was wine.
No, that's Riesling over there. Now, Steve, don't get infatuated with this left tackle from the Patriots, because guys tend to always look better when they're wearing those Patriot colors. I'm not saying the guy's a bum, but I expect Jason Light to do his homework.
Hey, guys always look pretty good when they're 6'8", 370, and can move. You know, they look pretty good there.
I understand.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting for the Bucs.
You didn't notice who the best free agent guard who might be on the market, did you?
I haven't done my work on the guards yet, Ira. But you know,
obviously, their number one need is a right guard. Obviously.
They need a right guard. Now, I can't remember where I heard this. Arian said it somewhere. I want to say it's the Barstool interview, which is 45 minutes long. And unfortunately, since last weekend, I have had 45 minutes to listen to it. But somewhere,
how many damn interviews has Bruce Arians done?
Well, there's a Barstool
week,
thing.
Steven?
This Barstool interview was done last summer. It was clearly at his house.
Okay.
They republished it a couple days ago. Somewhere, Arians had talked about the offensive line crisis in the NFL. He talked about Soldier. Even though Soldier underplayed his value, he was still better than Eric Flowers, a first-round pick. And Arians went into detail about why there's an offensive line crisis in the NFL. I don't want to bore people at all, but he basically said, he being Arians, basically said, nowadays, it takes 3 years to develop an offensive lineman. And if it takes you 3 years to develop an offensive lineman, you're going to be developing him for the next coach, because you're going to get run. And so that leads me to believe, number one, Donovan Smith might be safer than people want him to be. Number two, if Donovan Smith is not safe, they're not drafting a guy. They're going to go out and get a proven dude. That's what that tells me.
I'm okay with Donovan Smith, Steve, while he was under a rookie contract. Now things are a little bit different.
I understand, Sage. We hit that last podcast, and it will be an interesting philosophical thing coming from Bruce Arians. I wanted to run this quote by you, Ira, since you are the local media's top insider with Team Glazer. The Buccaneers put out a video, sort of a look at the hiring, a sweeping Hard Knocks-like look at the hiring of Bruce Arians.
What is it, Steven Spielberg? Take it easy with the sweeping.
No, it was a fantastic video. I don't know if you guys saw it. But
this is not the invasion of Normandy with Spielberg at the controls over here, Steven.
All right,
continue.
So, Frank Capra. He did all those war movies.
Capra,
okay.
Brian Glazer's
Alex Capra.
Brian Glazer's on the video, and he says, quote, "I think as a family you have each other's back. My father always said," quoting Malcolm Glazer, "if you want to know the road ahead, ask the man that's been there." And that's exactly the case.
These are pithy words over here, Steven.
Brian Glazer says, and that's exactly the case with hiring Bruce Arians, which to me says, hey, they were not going with a young coach, period. And who did they interview? Young nobody coaches. Was it all a sham?
They were not going to take a first-time NFL head coach. You're right. And Brian just acknowledged it. The three of us can't be surprised. We thought it was Arians all along. We're not coming in like Johnny Come Latelys. I mentioned the guy's name in November as the guy that could solve a lot of woes over here and then fits the puzzle beautifully. You said I was targeted on November 7th in a podcast. That's a famous date. I'm going to remember that November 7th over there, Steve. But is it a sham? You hate to call things a sham. But Arians was the guy, and Arians was the guy for a long time. And unless he changed his mind, he was going to be the guy in Tampa. Lee, any ideas that they were going to hire anybody else other than Bruce Arians now that it's all over and done with?
There's all sorts of little shreds of evidence that they were after Arians for a couple months. Certainly a couple weeks.
And it's not his relationship with Jason Light that interested the Glazers. To me, that's a negligible factor.
It might have helped to get to him.
But the Winston stuff and what he did in Arizona, the Glazers were mesmerized by that. Mesmerized.
Well, I mean, Arians basically said he knew. You know, that certainly greased the wheels for Arians to come here to Light. It's a little irresponsible is not the right word. Naive is not the right word. But, I mean, 2 and 2 equals 4 here. If Light's not here, I doubt that Arians is here. Unless they're going to pay Arians $17 million a year or something ridiculous. I really think that was the conduit. That's the word I was looking for, the conduit.
Ooh, conduit.
That was the conduit to get Arians here. And that's why I think I told somebody once before, it would not shock me. I can't remember if I said on the record, on this podcast, or just someone, you know, in everyday surroundings. I don't want to see this happen, but it would not surprise me if after the draft, the Glazers wave bye-bye to the Light. Like, hey, we got our man.
That would be some development.
Now, I'm sure Arians would balk at that because, again, they have a relationship. But it wouldn't shock me. I'm not predicting it. Not saying it will happen. It wouldn't shock me because, again, the Glazers got their man.
If it happened, Arians would have a huge hand in picking Light's successor.
Oh, absolutely.
I can tell you that.
Yeah, at this point, it would shock me just because it feels like that was all part of the package, at least for this year.
Yeah.
So next year's all bets are off as far as the end of the season or how he feels it's going. But after this draft, wow, that would be quite a shocker.
Well, here's one for you. I don't know if you noticed this, Steve, or not, or Ira, if you noticed it. I've seen Light at the Shrine practices. We all see him, obviously, at the Dog and Pony shows last week. He looks like a rejuvenated man, like someone that was on a death sentence and had it revoked.
You think he might have jumped in his pool last week, Lee?
More than once. More than once. He just looks like a different guy. I mean, he's chipper. He's upbeat. He's laughing. Has a smile pasted on his face. In that same video that Steve was talking about, that Light was saying he was walking around his house in the middle of the night, I hope with clothes on, and he's doing some kind of yeah to himself, like some kind of weird.
I gotta see this video.
Yeah, Light talks about walking around and after midnight, fist pumping to himself, and
he's got kids that are trying to sleep. Well, come on, Light, what are you doing? Now I see Arians opened his mouth about another player on another team over there, Steven.
Yeah, we'll get to that, Ira. We heard the great offers from Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon to open the podcast. And I just want to remind everybody, the websites are there for you. Fantastic offers going through the end of January. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Ed Morse, that was a real person, Ira. It's a real family-owned dealership across the state of Florida. More than 70 years providing great service. And those are Hillsborough County's only Cadillac dealerships in the whole county. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Ed Morse Cadillac, Brandon. You could trust them. Check out those websites. I wanted to bring this up to you, Sage, as we, because you mentioned the assistant coaches, and the list came out. We talked about Joe Gilbert, and it's fun. It's a giant list. But, Ira, I started to think about this.
They might need a new wing at One Buck Place over there, Steve, for some new offices.
Oh, they might. But now, Jameis Winston, he is now going to have his first taste of a new system in the NFL outside of his rookie year. 4 years, same system. So he's coming in here, and Jameis is an eager student. You know, he's into this. He's going to give it everything he's got. But he's got Bruce Arians, the quarterback whisperer. He's got Byron Leftwich, who played in the system and is an outspoken guy as his coordinator play caller. And he's got Clyde Christensen, who Arians says is the one of the best mechanics guys in the league and a trusted voice, et cetera, et cetera. So that's three big-time voices in Jameis's ear. Is that too much?
We're about to find out. It might be, Lee. It may not all work out. It may not all mesh. I think at the end of the day, Arians is running the show, Lee. He wrote the book, not Clyde Christensen. He wrote the book, not Byron Leftwich. He's supposed to be how to develop an elite quarterback. And chapter two doesn't say hire Byron Leftwich and Clyde Christensen. It's like Arians is the guy. So, look, that's for Arians to work out about delegating authority. One thing, I wouldn't say, Lee, that it worries me, but it's something to keep an eye on, is Arians seems more and more willing to delegate authority the second time around as an NFL head, the third time around if you count Indy. Is that a good thing? I don't know. When I hire Bruce Arians, Lee, I want Bruce Arians. So I'm going to be watching that. Steve brings up a fair point.
Well, it's like when you go to Burns and you order this
Chateaubriand,
yes.
My friend.
Yeah, when you order that, you don't expect Chuck Steak.
There you go. Remember what happened to Bill Polian at the end at Indy? He was pushing his son, I believe it's Chris Polian. And meanwhile, they want the Hall of Fame executive, and Chris Polian is taking more and more responsibility. Bill's receding into the background. Next thing you knew, didn't they fire him?
Yep.
I think they fired him.
Yeah, they fired him.
They fired a Hall of Fame executive.
Well, after Peyton Manning got hurt, they were what? 2-14, something like that.
I don't see Belichick relinquishing a lot of authority in New England.
Hey, Ira, the Bucks fire Hall of Famers all the time. They end up on other teams. We do it left and right here.
The Clyde Christensen thing kind of freaks me out because,
well, he was on Tony's staff. Yeah, he was on Dungy's staff.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, this is the same guy who was responsible for an offense that couldn't score a touchdown in playoff games. Now, if you want to argue, look at the crap he had to deal with. Jaquez Green.
I think it was just 1 year.
Not yet. He wasn't the coordinator throughout.
Now, allegedly, apparently, you know, I did a little bit of research on Christian when I first heard about it, and I had to call up my cardiologist because I thought I was going to have some sort of attack. And I don't want that guy anywhere near Jameis. So I started doing some research because I wanted, you know, I was just freaked out. And apparently he's had some sort of rebirth as a coach. Now, I'm not saying this guy is the next Sid Gilman, but it seems like he's done better since he left the Bucs. And now, is that because the Bucs, if you look at it, and a lot of people always talk about, Gruden with Dungy's players. Well, go look at the roster, Dungy's last year, and go look at the roster with Chucky. A completely overhauled offense. You know,
Smart enough not to mess with the defense. Smart enough.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Overhauled offense, completely overhauled offense. So was it that, you know, I think Jaquez Green was out of the league a year later. Riddell Anthony, I don't know, whatever happened to him. Is it because he had nothing to work with in Tampa Bay, or did he get around better coaches and he learned, absorbed some intelligence from the – I don't know. But it seemed like he had some sort of rebirth. But still, Clyde Christensen, just the name gives me willies, Ira.
You know, a guy that was a quarterback coach here about 10 years ago, I thought the guy was really good, was Alex Van Pelt.
Yeah.
Worked with Freeman during that fantastic 2010 season. I don't think one thing led to another, and then I guess when Raheem got fired, there was a regime change. Schiano came in. I don't believe he retained Alex Van Pelt.
No, he brought
I thought he did a very good job.
Did he not go to Green Bay and work with Rodgers for a few years?
Yeah. I believe he did. Steve, you're doing a little research here. That worries me a little bit.
No research. There's a benefit to having the opportunity to work with a guy who's played the game. I just wanted to bring it up, Ira. Could it be too many voices? because Jameis is going to ask a lot of questions. And you know what? If you ask you three guys questions, you know, you might lean toward the answer you want. And it's a lot for Arians to manage. But Bill Parcells, Ira, was on Sirius just tonight as I was driving in. And he was asked about all the coaching hires. Parcells put his foot down. He wouldn't name names, wouldn't go anywhere. But he said, look, offensive coach, defensive coach, special teams coach, it does not matter who you hire. Doesn't matter which side of the ball, and I get all this focus on offense. He said everyone's getting it wrong if they think that you one side is better than the other. He said you need a guy who can manage the whole team, set the whole direction, and have what I thought was neat, have real authority and real all the players listening when he talks to that side of the ball. So if your offensive guy can't talk to the defense and them take him real seriously, then you'd have the wrong guy. So I think Arians checks that box at least, that everyone's going to know that he's the guy, and he'll be involved in all phases. So
let's not forget the great NFL videos of NFL films, Lee, of Parcells screaming at Phil Simms, belittling Phil Simms on the sidelines. Sometimes after Simms did the right thing, you know, maybe improvised the play or something, and Parcells still chewed him out. Hey, that's not what we called or something. You've heard Simms talk about what it was like to work on it. And Parcells is a defensive guy. He didn't shy away from getting his hands dirty on the offensive side of the ball, Lee.
Unless I heard your explanation wrong, and I love Parcells, unless I heard your explanation wrong, that if a defensive or offensive head coach, his philosophy doesn't bleed into the other side of the ball, I think he's conning people, honestly.
Yeah, I'm just sharing what Parcells said. Meaning, he's got to be able to speak to the whole team.
I'm not sure Cutter passed that checkpoint.
Well,
I don't know if Cutter passed that.
Oh, no, he did not. He didn't care about the defense. Love was just the opposite. But, I mean, defensive guys, and I call them meathead defensive guys, they have a certain philosophy, and they want the offense to play ball like they want to. Dungy's a perfect example. That offense was prehistoric, man. And why was that? Because, Dungy's defense. And anybody tells me opposite, they're conning me. I'm sorry. It's really that simple. It's just, I can't say any more simpler than that. A mentality of a head coach, what Parcells is saying, you should be involved in both sides of the ball.
You've got to be the CEO. Yeah, yeah.
That mentality bleeds over. It has to. Otherwise, you wouldn't be speaking for the whole team.
By the way, since our last podcast, gentlemen, we have learned Mr. Mike Smith, good man, didn't get the job done in Tampa, but a good man, is through with football, apparently, going to greener pastures. For all I know, he could end up being on the senior golf tour. He loves himself some golf.
No.
But a good man going out to pasture. I think he's 60 years old, Steve. And
59. I'll give him a break.
You know, you look back and you say, you know what? He did a nice job in Atlanta. He did do a nice job. It didn't end well, but he did a nice job with the Falcons. And I think he was undermined by some bad drafts, Dimitroff and some of them. That's why they brought Pioli in. they parachuted Pioli in. They needed help. And two or three bad drafts will sink you in this league, Lee, very quickly. And I got to say
shame on Mike Smith. Shame on him. He was on.
He's not allowed to retire. What
no,
do you mean,
he was on
him?
With Alex Marvez. I had this interview the other day, which we wrote up on the website.
You miss a damn interview.
We try not to. So he was on with Marvez in the morning.
You talk to your wife a little more and stop listening to Mike Smith. You'd be in better shape over there.
So
continue.
Sage, listen.
Wait a minute. Well, he's a little distracted.
No, I'm saying shame on Mike Smith. Alex Marvez says to him after a very cordial interview.
They're good buddies, I think.
Yeah, they're friends. After a very cordial interview where Mike Smith was promoting this line of shoulder pads and they were talking about the playoffs a little bit, and Mike Smith was very relaxed. And Alex says, it didn't work out for you, Mike, in Tampa. However, how would you like to reflect on your time there and what's next for you? And what does Mike Smith do? He doesn't have one nice word for Bucks fans, the Glazers, anybody on the team, doesn't even mention the Bucks. Just says, well, I've been blessed to coach in this league and, nothing. So shame on him for his first chance to say something nice.
You mean 3 years in Tampa and had
nothing to say about it? Not one word. Not a peep. Didn't utter the word Bucks, anything related to the Bucks.
I don't think Mike Smith can be understandably be bitter about what happened to him in Tampa. A lot of Buck fans, maybe most of them, think that Cutter was too patient with Mike Smith. Should have dumped him after year two. He didn't. Should have dumped him at the bye week. He didn't. And I think finally his hand was forced. I don't know this for a fact, Steve, but we try to read the tea leaves here, and we're pretty darn good about doing it. I say Cutter's hands were forced after the bye week loss to Atlanta, and he was told to get rid of this guy. Cutter didn't want to do it, but he did it. Otherwise, Cutter would have been gone. He did it. So I don't think Mike Smith's got one thing to beef about his 3 years in Tampa. Lee, am I wrong?
Well, Mike Smith, yeah, he's got something to beef about. He's looking in the freaking mirror. Mike Sando of BSPN wrote a story where he does a regrade of everybody's offseason grades. And he gave the Bucks a C- for last offseason. I gave it a D-. I had to struggle not to give it an F. And that's even with the acquisition of JPP. Because the one thing the Bucks didn't do, and it set them up, it burned the organization. It cost people their careers, cost people their jobs, was they brought back Mike Smith. There was no way in hell he should have been brought back. No way in hell. Mike Smith's a great guy. You were sitting there extolling his virtues, great guy. I can find great guys in his bar, like a half dozen. I sure as hell wouldn't hire him to coach Pee Wee, much less the NFL. There's stuff about, oh, he works hard. Oh, he's a great guy.
I'm the guy who just said he has nothing to complain about. I'm not giving him any excuses. I'm not giving Mike Smith any excuses.
Okay,
he had a shot, and he came up short. Came up short.
But he should complain when he looks in the mirror that he did such an awful job. By the way, I'll put this up there real quick. Miko is very active on Instagram.
Again, Miko?
Why not again?
All right, let me hear this one.
And I guess people are asking, what's Brent going to do? And she gave out her ultimatum. If Brent is going to play another year, she has three ultimatums, requirements. And the Bucks meet all three. So technically, Brent could come back.
All right, let me hear him, Lee.
The team he plays for, number one, cannot have Ryan Tannehill on the roster.
Number two?
Cannot have Mike Smith as a defensive coach.
Number three?
Cannot have John Hoke as a secondaries coach. The Bucks meet all three requirements.
Wow.
There you go.
Boy, a lot of dirt's coming out from Miss Grimes.
All right, Ira, I wanted to throw this by you, and we appreciate all the good folks who listen and comment on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. Sage is the king of the local podcasts, except you are getting clobbered by the commish on Podbean. But you guys have that friendly rivalry. You're the king of iTunes.
You know
king
what?
King of Google Play.
Let it die down a little bit. You know, the commish had the coaching change to scream about. He's good at that stuff. I'm the grind it out, day-to-day guy. I'm going to catch him within a couple of weeks, and I'm going to fly past you. You listening to that, Jason? Right past you.
All right, Ira, something that I'm going to write about on Joe Bucks Fam, I'm going to run it by to you first. Todd Bowles did a little interview with Casey Phillips, Buccaneers.com, and he's very close to the vest with his words. He's the opposite of Bruce Arians when it comes to hyperbole and throwing meat out
there. Doesn't
give anything away. You know what he tells Casey Phillips? She asks him, what really got you to take the job? He tells Casey Phillips, Bruce Arians told me I could come here and do whatever I wanted. 4-3-3-4, whatever I want, so I'm here.
That's outstanding.
What is your impression there? You're talking more about delegating. And
again, it's another indication. I'm not saying that Arians is ready to go out to pasture. No, I'm not saying that. First, it's a reflection of his confidence in these guys that he hired.
Sure.
That's number one. But number two, he sees himself as the overseer. He's not a first-time NFL head coach. He knows what the routine is, and he knows the process, and he'd rather be the big picture guy, and that's what he's going to be, the big picture guy. The only time he's going to be little picture is with number three, number three. And when he's got to slap him around, he will do so. And I hope he's tough on Jameis, and I think he will be. But as far as Bowles is concerned, guys, I've said it before, I'm not the first to say it. I'm not the only one to say it. If they don't go to a 3-4 front, I'm going to be surprised as their base defense. I think Bowles is confident with that. I think they're going to look at the personnel, and it's going to draw them in that direction. And I did a little research of my own, Lee. The last time this team used a three-man front as their base defense was 1990.
Oh, wow.
The last year of Ray Perkins. Got fired at the end of that year with about three games left. Richard Williamson took over, and was the coach the following Richard year. Williams. But 1990, they used a three-man front.
Who was the famous?
That's a long time to go with a four-man front.
Who was the famous defensive coordinator? He worked for McKay, I think, in '80s. Yeah, '80s. He bounced over to San Diego with Coryell. Great big huge guy. Looked like Burl Ives.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He was a 3-4 guy. I know that.
Yeah. You're not talking about Floyd Peters, before Floyd Peters.
Yeah, before Floyd. Floyd Peters was strictly 43 kind of guy.
Yeah. I see a three-man front in Tampa, Steve.
I hear you. I just thought you'd like, I thought it was just, you'd enjoy hearing that ball saying, I can do whatever I want. 4-3-3-4. That's his quote.
I don't know anybody that doesn't think Todd Bowles is a heck of a defensive mind.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy by the name of Emory Hunt. He's also known as the czar of the playbook. He's up and comer. He's really good. He does a lot of draft stuff. He does some college broadcasting. And I do not know specifically what he does for the Jets, but I know he's a credentialed media member with the Jets because he's always taking pictures of Giant Stadium, the press box, during Jets games. And I was talking to him this week at the Shrine practices at the Fruit Dome, and he told me, he's like, you know, Bowles kind of got the short end of the stick in the sense that he had a lot of injuries and really, you know, he's working with a rookie quarterback. He said defensively, he thought Bowles did an okay job if you factor in the injuries and everything.
Jet defense wasn't that bad, Steve. Jet defense wasn't bad.
It was very interesting. Adam Gase was on Sirius talking about taking the Jets job and what a strong feel he has for taking an in-division job because he was game planning against their defense. He knows the personnel. And he just said that really how Miami Gase himself said, I couldn't do anything against that defense. They were just too good.
And played him twice.
Yeah, he played him twice.
And this guy was telling me, Emory Hunt was telling me, that Bowles very much is a hybrid defense kind of guy. He does both.
Lee, I'm gonna challenge you right now. Give me one. I'm only gonna ask for one. One little tidbit, a nugget, a tidbit, an observation from the Shrine practices. An observation. What'd you see out there?
Well, obviously, GM, scouts. I didn't exactly watch the practices a whole lot. I learned, Steve and I learned through experience, that really people don't care. But the inside information that you can gather, people care about. And I got
Mayock running around all over.
Yeah, he is. But, of course, he's a Raiders employee now. And I joked with him when I saw him Monday. I said, I guess I can't ask you questions anymore. He laughed. But Mayock was there, certainly, and he's a grinder. The Ian Rappaport report about Bruce Arians allegedly calling up DeSean Jackson and trying to woo him, I could not confirm that. But what I do know is, and this makes sense, I think every coach does this, Arians is trying to call every Bucs player, you know, kind of give them a rah-rah speech, you know, like, hey, Cam Bray, you want to go up and screw up the Falcons? Let's go, baby. We're going to fire up their ass. I'm ready. How about you? You know, those kind of conversations. So I think it was just a formality that he was calling DeSean Jackson. Whether he was trying to get him to change his mind to stay with the Bucs, I can't confirm that. And I talked to some
Suppose he calls Brent Grimes and Miko answers. That's a problem, Steve.
Well, hey, everybody wants money, so when everyone's looking for a job, things change. I want to run this by you, Sage. I brought it up on my podcast. Here's a scenario for you. Let's say the Buccaneers, you know, I think a safe bet that Humphreys is going to command between $6 and $7 million. Safe bet. Let's call it 6.5. All right? He's not going to be the top slot guy on the market. That's going to be Golden Tate. Let's say they lose out on Humphreys. Who knows what's really in his heart? Maybe he wants to go play for whoever. Well, if you were going to pay Humphreys $7 million, all of a sudden, keeping DeSean Jackson at $10 million really isn't much of a difference.
They're not the same receiver.
They're not the same receiver.
Not
the same production. However, I'm off here, but I'm confident that Chris Godwin can play the slot. Played a lot over the middle. And they've always talked about his versatility. And DeSean Jackson, obviously, is really built like a slot receiver to begin with. And you could do a lot of different things with him in space and as that guy.
I think Arians might have done that with, remember, Michael Floyd out in Arizona.
Yeah. So
he was productive.
That could be a possibility, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's leverage on Humphreys.
Lee, losing Humphreys in free agency could have an impact on a decision about bringing back to Sean Jackson. I don't think that's far-fetched.
It could, but I remember Light said over the weekend that Arians was hired. He's going to do everything he possibly can to keep Humphreys. Now,
like Steve says, though, all it takes is one other team.
Oh, sure. But what I'm thinking about is take DeSean Jackson's money, give $7 million to Adam Humphreys. Well, he's still got $3 million to play with. John Brown, everybody screams about speed, and this is a pet peeve of mine. I watch other games in the NFL every freaking Sunday, and I see offenses scoring. They don't have DeSean Jackson on the roster. You know, this guy might be the most overrated wide receiver I've ever seen. But John Brown has 4.3 speed. So these people that, you know, on their little video game consoles that, oh, you got to have speed. Well, John Brown can run, and he's got a background with Arians. You can get him for $1 million a year. So between the two, you can afford those two.
Yeah, I think Brown is probably going to get some good money. You know, maybe
$3 million, $3 million and $7 million. Humphreys, that's still $10
million.
I
don't think he's lived up to his draft status, John Brown.
Well, look,
I thought he might have been a first rounder.
He had a good year in Baltimore, which was impressive since they really didn't have
any quarterback.
So he's coming into free agency at the right time. He's still in his 20s. I don't know. Just wanted to throw it past the Sage there to see what you thought.
Bottom line is I don't want to lose Humphreys. I don't want to lose him.
Here's some other information. I just remembered this. I learned at the Shine Practices, Ira. Would you believe, you know, Maximal Smart, would you believe that Justin Watson led the team in tackles on special teams? A wide receiver that's forgotten, some people thought would be the next Adam Humphreys.
He filled in nicely for Russell Shepard.
He's like, 2 years removed from Shepard?
Yeah.
But okay. The number two tackler on special teams, Bobo.
Hey, there you go.
I won't say who I was talking to, but the person who I was talking to was a member of the Bucs coaching staff. I wrote about it already on JoeBucsFan.com. But he had said that he's convinced that both Justin Watson and Bobo were on different teams. They get a hell of a lot more playing time.
By the way, if we had to rate Bucs special teams overall, I'd say it's between a C- and a D. I don't think we can go any higher than that.
Last year?
Last year, overall.
Yeah, Scott, yeah.
Includes the kicking game.
I'd agree with you. It was not standout.
I don't think the punter had a particularly good year either.
And there's an element I forgot when I roasted the Bucks for their D- offseason freaking kicker again.
Well, they got a kicking coach, and he also handles punters. And I wouldn't surprise me at all to see Brian Anger gone. He's never been the same since his amazing year.
He's had two shaky years. Yeah,
he had a great year in 2016. Ira, we're going to clear out here and let you just tell the good listeners about the Hall of Fame dirt. We're a couple of weeks away now from John Lynch and your prospects there.
I just
got
my package in the mail.
What do the people need to know? I know you got your lineup, if you will. You can explain that.
All right.
What's going on?
First thing people need to know is it all comes down on the morning of February 2nd, whatever the Saturday morning is, the day before the Super Bowl. It's in Atlanta. It'll be in a meeting room. There'll be a big table. There'll be 48 chairs and four microphones. One of the four microphones is in front of Peter King. It never moves. He weighs in on all 18 candidates. Now, why 18 instead of 15? 15 modern-day players, two contributors, which is Pat Bowlen and Gil Brandt, and one old-time player, which will be Johnny Robinson of the old Kansas City Chiefs. Those guys get in. They get in because people respect the work that those subcommittees do to nominate those guys.
Rubber stamp?
They're not fighting. Almost a rubber stamp. Mm-hmm. It's almost a rubber stamp. The only guy that didn't get in like that is Tagliabue. He's having trouble getting in as a contributor. He's been knocked down three times. So he's very polarizing, Paul Tagliabue, former commissioner. Anyway, 15 modern-day players. We have our list. We know the order of the speeches. I go 14th out of 15. Next to last. Now, before people get depressed about that, oh, man, you're in there 8 hours. They're glassy-eyed. They're looking for a bagel. They're looking for something to eat. They got to go to the bathroom. I want to remind you that in 2013, it was the Warren Sapp first-year eligibility, and I went next to last. And the only guy behind me was Michael Strahan, who was presented by Bob Glauber. Strahan was the odds-on favorite to be one of the five finalists. He was not. Warren Sapp was. So it's not a bad spot. I may lay a little guilt trip on these people. I don't want to give away too much about my speech. But this is 6 years in a row for Mr. Lynch. He will be the candidate by far that is in there the longest for election. I think the next guy, this might be his fourth year. It might be Alan Faneker or something like that. Maybe Edgerrin James. This is 6 years for Lynch. Nobody's at five. So he's clearly been here the longest. And, Steve, if you're in the room 6 years in a row, Lee, as a finalist, it's going to be part of my presentation. 6 years in a row, that means you're not a fringe candidate. You are a Hall of Famer. And I will now give our listeners the little coup de grace because we don't hold anything back. So I'm going to lay it out. And it's quite remarkable, I believe. The Hall gives out a little booklet every year. It's got a lot of information, bios of all the Hall of Famers. It's got breakdowns of the finalists by class year by year. The semifinalists year by year. Well, it goes back to 1970. It's almost 50 years of voting. 50. I took it in my bedroom last week for a little light reading before the missus and I hit the sack. She's over there reading People magazine about Ariana Grande, and I'm reading about Jerome Bettis. Well, anyway, I opened that booklet with a mission. Here was my mission statement. How many guys since 1970 have been in that room as a finalist at least 6 years in a row and do not currently belong in Canton, do not have a bust in Canton? How many people in 50 years have been back time and again and don't ultimately end up wearing a gold jacket? You know how many I found? One. One name. And let me say it right now, I'm not finished. I'm just getting started. Because when I tell you who the name is, I can't make this stuff up. Javier, you better grab a seat. If you're listening in Vietnam, you better grab a couch. The one guy in 50 years that doesn't have a gold jacket, that's been in the room as much as John Lynch in consecutive years, is Bob Kuchenberg, who just passed away. He never got into Canton. And now they're going to probably put him in a year or two as a senior candidate. And guess what? He's underground. He can't enjoy it. How's his family going to feel about that? So I don't want to hear any nonsense. We'll get around to John Lynch. We'll get around to him. We don't need him this year. Let's go, people. You're in that room 6 years in a row. You're a Hall of Famer, DeKemper. I'm looking right at you, and I'm making believe that you're Sal Palantonio. Now, you got to lose about 80 pounds, DeKemper, but that's all right. Steve, that is a hell of a guilt trip I'm about to lay on these people.
So you're going to play the death card by saying, hey, look.
I'm a desperate man over there, DeKemper. Whatever it takes.
John Lynch could be dead by next summer. You got to help the
whatever
guy out.
No, my main argument is.
I know.
My main
powerful.
Argument is.
Well, the way
powerful.
The 49ers are playing, he'd probably have a stroke sooner
history,
or later.
So. History says he's a Hall of Famer. Not me. History. The people in this room that have preceded you. You've got to honor history. Steve.
It's a great nugget. It's powerful. I was at the edge of my seat here. And
Bob Kuchenberg is the guy. Just passed away last week. You can't make that stuff up. Can't make it up. Bob Kuchenberg.
Ira, before we get out of here, let's have your picks. Sunday's game at Chiefs and Patriots, and, of course, the Rams head to New Orleans.
All right, we'll start with the Rams in New Orleans. I don't like the way the Saints offense has been playing for about 5-6 weeks. I think the defense has been carrying them, and I think that's a tall order against the Rams. The Rams have an excellent offense. Gurley, I thought the key to the Rams against Dallas was Gurley's health. He's healthy. Lee's favorite running back, C.J. Anderson, is going wild. The offensive line looked tremendous. I'm going for the Rams in a slight upset, not a major upset. I think the Rams will win. I am certainly not abandoning my Chiefs in their moment of truth. They made the Colts look really bad. Patriots are the Patriots. I think the Chiefs have a better team. They're playing at home, Lee. I don't care if it's 3 degrees out. I don't care if it's -5. They've never had a Mahomes before. They got Mahomes now. I got my faith in that kid. I'm going with the Chiefs. Chiefs and Rams, Lee, what do you got? Don't disappoint me, Lee.
I want the Chiefs to win so bad. But as you said, the Patriots. That is the most overrated home field experience in the NFL. The expansion's advantage.
Chiefs have a better team, Lee. Chiefs
it's a great experience, team. But the advantage is... I know, but it's the damn Patriots. It's that hex playing playoff games at home.
If Belichick pulls this garbage off, you might as well put him. You don't even wait 5 years till he's retired. Put him in camp now.
I hate what I'm going to say, but I fully expect the Patriots. I don't want them to win, but I fully expect the Patriots to win. And lastly, an NFC Championship game. Good luck beating Drew Brees at home. End of sentence.
Understood.
So Lee is going Patriots and
Saints. The opposite of me.
The exact opposite of you.
Now I think you're going to go 1-1. You're going to pick one of my guys and one of his.
I'm going to keep it simple. I'm going to go with your pick, Syra. I think all those defensive additions of the Rams, all the Aqib Talibs and the Marcus Peters and the Sue, I think they're all going to come together for a huge defensive game. I hope Talib takes back a pick six.
You think Talib will follow Michael Thomas and shadow him?
I think so. He's done that before. He's big and physical as well. So I think that's a very good possibility. But I think the Rams are more balanced and they're going to win. And I think Mahomes has got some special magic. It won't be too big for him. And the home field, Tom Brady, interesting stat, has not won a road game in the playoffs for 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Lee, what about that nugget I dropped on the Mad Dog today about only one team's ever won a Super Bowl that had a losing record on the road, the 2010 Packers. The Patriots, they're 3-5 on the road.